The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. This is C.A. Nuri and I shall be your host for today, as we have a mashup Wednesday, and we have a mashup Wednesday, of course, with On the Clock, and we are going to be discussing immigration. It's an ongoing conversation that we had, right? But we were tarrying a bit because we were hoping to have the Minister for State to come so we can interrogate to get some explanations, but that didn't work out. And Aaron said, man, we could have a show and hash out some things. Because this administration, the PLP, has come up with a plan. They have come up with a plan where they believe that they have come up with a solution to deal with our immigration scenario, our immigration issues. Note, I did not say crisis. We do not have an immigration crisis, but we do have some issues, and they put in a policy program that we are planning to analyze, question, poke at, and conclude with. So that's what the conversation is going to be today. We are going to analyze the policy put forward, the response that the government has put forward, and go into detail as that. Is it adequate enough? At one point in time, and I know Aaron mentioned it, that the intonation of the Prime Minister was questioned, said that he has one tune with the foreign dignitaries. However, when he speaks to the other behemoths, it seemed to be an entirely different tune. In fact, people even question whether the policy has shifted and question what is the policy. Then the press secretary came on and said, well, it's not that the position has switched. It's that the tune has switched. Right? Okay. Yeah, the tone has switched. and recently, the Prime Minister has come forward and mentioned, said, no, my tone ain't switched. I have the same one program, one policy, just that I can do things in decency and in order. So I want to get all of that out so people understand and appreciate the conversation that we plan to have today. And then I'm planning to bait Erin, because Erin is a smart one, right? I plan to bait how she's going to respond to all of this. Because I embrace what the Minister of State and of Immigration, and of course the Chairman of the Progressive Liberal Party, the Minister of Foreign Affairs, said, what else can we do? We're doing all of these things and you are still complaining. This is the best effective things we can do right now besides breaking international laws and sides of demeaning and diminishing people who are staying in the Bahamas, right? So they have one or two policies. And Aaron just stepped out, so I'm just waiting for her to return in. So let's go at one of the policies that we plan to do, right? One is that the announcement has been made that all those who are residents of the Bahamas, citizens of the Bahamas, they are advised. They have been advised to move away from the shanty towns and find a regular occupation and housing. So that's one. They also advise those persons who are living inside the shanty town who are irregular irregular migrants, that they are encouraged to leave. Right. They also mentioned that social services, if you are documented Bahamians, right, you can apply to social services to get benefits and aid and housing assistance. Right. So that has been implemented. And then the reinstatement of the Shanty Town Committee has started again. And we're going to have a discussion on whether we think that it's a continuation, the reinstatement of the Shantytown Commission, is a continuation of the last administration, where they'll be using the same notes and recommendations, or it's going to be a brand new concept with a new policy based on this government's agenda. So these are the conversations that we will be having today, and that we are excited today to have as we analyze the minister's policy. So what we'll do now is take a quick break, our first commercial break, right? So we get Aaron to settle in so we can start this conversation. This is Guardian Radio in the AM with C.A. Nuri, and of course Aaron is joining me, and we're going to take the short commercial break and come right back.
Carifta tickets. The 50th Carifta Games is coming. April 7th to April 10th. Tickets are on sale now online at carifta50.com or at the Thomas A. Robinson National Stadium, Western Grand Entrance. For more details, email tickets at carifta50.com or call 605-4051.
Girl, you see how Cora eye look funny, all black up yesterday?
But she say she bump into a wall when she's running after the church.
But last Saturday, you see her arm was all black and blue, right?
What you saying? You think something wrong between her and Jack?
I ain't sure, but you know Jack is a jealous man. I hear him and Cora last Friday. I hear him say he hear Cora have eyes for Junior.
Now you know that ain't true. Cora is a good woman. Does mind her business, take care of them churn, and go to church every Sunday. So what you think we should do?
I think we should report Jack, you know. Cora don't say nothing, but silence hides violence. And we don't want to line up in the cemetery.
Not me. I ain't getting in nobody business. Then Jack come after me and I land up next to Cora.
No, man, we could call or text Crime Stopper. And remember, we can even get some grocery money for our tip.
Remind me again how does work.
We can call them in Miami at 328-TIPS or 328-8477. Or when we in the island, call toll free at 300-TIPS or 300-8477. And if you don't have no minutes, use the Crack Crime Bahamas app and we could text them and the messages get on mix up before it leave your phone so nobody can know what you're saying.
So what are we waiting on then? Let's go earn some grocery money.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio AM. And now I'm going to drill Aaron, right? The first question, Aaron, is Operation Secure. That's the name of the operation with all of this is going to be under. And I want it in layman's term so the listening audience can appreciate what is Operation Secure.
Okay, so I am reading from the National Policy Framework on Immigration that was released February 2023, and that the Minister Keith Bell would have addressed or spoken to on the television show Beyond the Headlines with Shanique Miller on the ILTV studio platform on the Monday night immediately preceding the national address by the Prime Minister, right? And so the Honorable Minister Keith Bell was on Beyond the Headlines discussing this document, National Policy Framework for Immigration. So the document in the introduction reads, anchoring the framework is Operation Secure, a joint security operation between the Royal Bahamas Police Force and the Department of Immigration to address security and migration-related issues in those areas. The operation aims to identify irregular migrants, documented migrants, and Bahamians living in these communities and address their status. This will help reduce the risk of exploitation of migrants and ensure compliance with immigration regulations. But that seems out of context, right? It's not a full enough definition yet.
But it sounds similar to the last administration task force. So let's change it to, I always change in words, Operation Secure to an immigration task force where we go into the shanty towns to find out who's there. I assume right. That's all of that, what you read, it says that, basically.
Yeah.
To know who all is there. Now, let's say that is done. I'm not sure when that's going to come in effect, when they're going to start, who's going to be members of this task force, when it's going to be populated, but it's coming. Right? We just don't have a timeline for it, right? There hasn't been any announcements that it's going to be led by these people. Now, say we found out who all is there. We get a list, a census of immigrants, legal status. What happens then in under this Operation Secure?
Oh, boy. So when we look at the second or the first section of the document, it's called Enforcement of Laws, right? It actually is... it is comprehensive in scope, if not depth, right?
Mm-hmm.
First point is, well, the second point, handling of irregular migrants. Irregular migrants living in unregulated and unlawful communities will be detained and charged before the courts. If found guilty, they will be subject to deportation from the country. This is aimed at addressing the issue of irregular migration and reducing the risk of exploitation of migrants.
So, in essence, this is not going to be, I detain you and you get deported automatically. It seems going to be, there's going to be a wait.
Well, there has to be a process.
So, right? But a process doesn't come with a wait with it?
Well, there will be a processing time.
Mm-hmm. So, what do you think? Or how do you interpret, I'll give you a scenario.
Yeah.
It's an operation,
mm-hmm.
right? You detain 3 migrants and you question their status.
Right.
What will happen there?
So
what would you assume? What would happen?
Well, given the status of the prison, His Majesty's prison.
You can't lock the people up, man.
You could detain them.
Yeah, so I assume at the detention center, not the prison. What do you
think? Well, they're going before the courts for an offense. The detention center is an alternative. In the same document, they speak to creating a defense force base in Inagua. I assume that when migrants are brought to the country from open waters,
mm-hmm.
and they're brought to Inagua, that the government is using a telecommunication system. And in Inagua, these people are being processed before the courts.
But we've seen magistrates flown to Inagua to process that.
Right.
But I'm still Nassau-centric, and forgive me for that. I hear that they're going to be detained.
Right.
I hear that they're going through a legal process.
Right.
We know it's not a speedily type thing.
Right.
I'm assuming they're going to be stationed or held in the detention center until they go through that process. And you hinted it maybe even be in the jail. I just don't see you put migrants into a jail.
Well, I don't see... Well, as far as I'm concerned, it should not be a criminal offense. It's only recently that the court, that the government has been processing migrants before the courts before repatriating them, right? Some people argue that these people have due process. They should be brought before the courts. You shouldn't just pick them up and put them on a plane and send them back. Some people may want to file for asylum, claim for refuge, right? Some people may be genuinely fleeing state-sanctioned violence, right? And so, or violence sanctioned by authorized state actors, even if it's extrajudicial.
Mm.
And so there are people who should have their case or their plea heard before the courts.
You hinted that you don't think it should be jail time. But if you break a law, there surely needs to be a penalty. Either a fine or some jail time, then deportation.
I used to believe that, but I live in the Bahamas.
Yeah.
But what I am saying is this, is that there has to be a facility. It has to be the function and operation of the facility has to be guided by protocol policy. The people have to be detained humanely and processed before the courts. There are other reasons why you process people before the courts, right? You want to determine if you can find any proper identification. You want to identify them. You want to have them on your record so that if they come back into the country again, you could say, well, listen, this is your second time entering irregularly. You are now put on the stop list. You cannot file for a work permit. You cannot file for a visa. You cannot enter the country by any means, legitimately or otherwise. So there are reasons for processing, right? The question is, can you maintain the standards required while you are detaining them for processing? Mm. Can you ensure that they are living in humane conditions, that they're not subject to violence from authorities or from other detainees?
I want to ask you another question.
Yeah.
What about migrants who have status? they have work permits, but they live inside these unregulated situations. Does the government have a policy on that?
Well, but look here, before we... You're handling of Bahamians. Before we go right there, right? At the very beginning of this document, there's some language that I was hoping to have clarified by the policymakers, right? Mm-hmm. In its handling of irregular migrants, and it's repeated throughout the document, mm-hmm. right? Living in unregulated and unlawful communities. Now, I just assume or presume that we're talking about shantytown. When yes. you say unregulated and unlawful communities, right? What I want to know is, why did you have to use unregulated and unlawful? And is there a distinction being made here that we need to be aware of? Is there a difference between an unregulated community and an unlawful community?
They have two different meanings. Because surely there are Bahamian shantytowns who are lawful because they live on their own property, and that the community has become a shantytown because of...
Right, so it's not a matter of trespassing mm-hmm. or squatting on other people's lands. Mm-hmm. What is criminal is the lack of adherence to building codes.
Yes. Yes.
Right, and perhaps that's an unregulated community, and an unlawful community is a community that's built on land that you don't have permission to occupy, possibly crown land, mm-hmm. or you're encroaching on somebody who holds the title to the land, right? Mm-hmm. And you don't have proper building codes.
There you go. Okay. So what happened to these migrants?
Okay. Of Bahamians.
No, not Bahamians. I can come get the Bahamians next, because it can't be running Bahamian off government land. So I have an issue with that. But I want to know what you can do to the migrants first.
The documented migrants. So what the Prime Minister's indicated in all of his communications and all of his tones, right, is that documented migrants will be required to relocate at their own expense. Now, there have been several utterances from the Prime Minister and other state actors that include the employer's expense, right? The migrant or the employer's expense. So this is what is expected, right? That they will be given notice. They will be given time to find other accommodation.
So there's going to be time.
And then they'll be required to report back to immigration to show proof of residence.
So what if they don't move? Because I sure they have something about revocation and taking these work permits back.
Well, but this
I'm more concerned that the government knew or gave, knowing that they lived in shanty towns. I find that peculiar.
Well, I was talking about the Mandela effect yesterday. You know, that's when a whole group of people believe something to be true,
mm-hmm.
and then it is shown or challenged that it's not true, mm-hmm. and that this whole group of people not connected by geography, culture, or language all believe something that was incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
All my life, I thought that the employer had to show proof of residence for their migrant employee on a work permit.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that the government, the Department of Immigration, had inspectors that went out to verify that before finalizing the work permit.
Clearly, that ain't happening. So, but now the onus is now on the migrants. Are no longer on the employers,
but this
who you assumed is their responsibility to make sure they have housing.
This has to be clarified because the Prime Minister himself and the Minister have spoken, I'm not going to use the word duplicitously, but they have said on separate occasions, at the migrant's expense and at the employer and or migrant's expense, mm-hmm. right? And so that needs to be clarified as well. Because I think an employer refuses to do that should not be issued work permits. If you disregard the importance of knowing that your employee is living in approved housing, because I'm going to tell you why. Because approved housing costs more money than living in the shanty town, which means the employer must pay a salary that enables their employee to live, quote unquote, in the good condition.
As you are aware, just recently in Abaco in particular, there is a big opening of some kind of hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Construction booming.
Yeah, yeah.
They were being built by somebody.
Yeah.
We know who the majority of workers are right now in Abaco.
Yeah.
And we know where those majority of workers who in Abaco working on these construction sites, these big hotels, right? We know what country they come from and their status, etc., and where they live.
Mm-hmm.
They're about to open up their hotel, right? But there's no mention to say, well, they're going to find housing for their workers who they have work permits mm-hmm. for.
I saw it in the paper and I thought, well, wouldn't that be a follow-up question? I don't necessarily expect the developer to be thinking about that. I mean, not to be saying that out loud at the very least, but I would have expected a follow-up question. So, where is your labor force?
Where is your labor force? Who built this hotel?
Who built it? Who is going to continue building it? And I just put it like this, because I need a worker. Like, I need somebody in my house right now. I'm looking for a good Bahamian. Just give my name.
And you say, where is your workforce? You need plumbers. You need maids and butlers. And where are they getting them from? Will they also be coming from the current shanty town?
Absolutely.
Or will this hotel find housing? Or there should be a pause for them opening. It cannot open until you assure us that the person's working for you has some place to live.
Now, these things don't necessarily require a delay, right? The question is, are the state's agencies prepared or even able, right? Do they have the capacity to move at the pace necessary to minimize disruption in construction, development, and commerce, right?
I think they can ignore it and tell everything catch up. They just can ignore it and say, okay, you can live here for a while. And this is why there's a delay, because the hotel has to open up.
Yeah, you had this massive groundbreaking. Where is the Department of Labor? Where are the lists of skilled, semi-skilled, and unskilled? Because at this point, we should even be documenting unskilled Bahamian labor available for foreign direct investors, major corporate development, and then general construction in the community, right? And in small businesses. There can be no disruption unless the director of labor is prepared not just to arm employers with these names, but prepared with a mechanism to connect employers to employees.
And I want to move. Let's talk about Bahamians, because Bahamians come first.
Yeah.
There are Bahamians living in a shanty town.
Yeah.
What does the government plan to do with it? They can't run Bahamians off the shanty town
so,
if they have no place to live. I think we have a duty of care to them. They got to be at least allowed to live there for a while.
Listen, and the duty of care has to go beyond what we expressed today, which is a focus on Global North foreign direct investment, possibly even to the detriment of getting Bahamian heads in beds, right? We focus on foreign heads in beds and not Bahamian heads in beds. What I found interesting, Mr. Newry, is the article including statements from former FNM administration members, I think like folks who would have sat on their Shantytown task force.
Mm-hmm.
And what they said was that they had actually done a lot of work. I think they may have said like as much as they could have done. They had gotten to the point where they realized that there is a housing issue. They may not have used the word crises,
mm-hmm.
and that they couldn't move until they were able to provide housing policy solutions for the government to explore, right?
Mm.
And I think Fauk said they got to the point where they and Minister, then Prime Minister, agreed that they could not be prioritizing housing for migrants before Bahamians. Now, I don't know if that was a political decision or a governance decision.
Well, we know the Ministry of Houses are building houses. They have rent-to-own housing. But I'm not sure how many Bahamians are living inside the Abaco shanty towns, right?
Right.
But will that be enough for those Bahamians inside the shanty towns to move in and to have, I assume, the monies to make the deposit?
The government cannot build enough homes, right? They can't build enough homes to provide heads and beds for people living in the shanty towns. If the Bahamian government's estimates are correct, that approximately 90% of the people in shantytowns are Bahamians.
Man, I believe the people's status. I ain't sure they're saying that's Bahamian.
Now, I feel you. Mm. And possibly all people with status. But they can't put 90% are the people in the shanty towns in rent-to-own homes. Those people just can't afford it. The banks will not tolerate it. The Bahamas Mortgage Corporation cannot tolerate it. And the government really has to come up with options that are actually accessible by people.
It sounds like a delay again.
We haven't even talked, listen, we haven't even talked about what hurricane insurance policies look like for people in rent-to-own properties. Who is responsible for maintenance and management of those properties in storm time?
If you're renting, the owner can't be the people who are paying the rent.
You talk to the people then who put together the policy yet?
Lord.
And right, and so we haven't, just to say, oh, we got about 12 rent-to-own homes means nothing.
But they mentioned social services. Say, go to social services and social services can fix you up.
Not discounting the apple and the commitment of people who are working in social services, that this policy is being enacted without also showing us the policies that will be enacted to reinforce and enhance the capacity of social services can't handle the people they have coming to them now.
The legitimate people, not the people inside the shanty town to increase.
Right.
But and that's what they say. They say, go to social services and social services will fix you up. They'll find a home for you. You're straight. So they just need you to move.
I really wish that the people who speak on behalf of the government understand how easy it is to misread what it is they're saying. Mm. You could imagine, like, it just made no sense. And if they wonder why people are hesitant to engage government services and to try and figure out what is available to them. When you hear something like, they just go to social services and they're going to take care of you. Just go to social services and you will be assisted.
We know what people, Bahamians complain about social services now. But we have a quick telephone call here. We'll listen to that telephone call and then we go back to analyzing the protocols and procedures that this Operation Secure is doing. Go ahead, caller.
Good morning. How is everyone doing today?
Everybody is well, man.
While we're addressing, I think this gigantic challenge, this challenge that we have with housing, the need for housing, the exacerbation of the need for housing, which is clearly what we are, the reason it has become to this very dire place is because of the lack of someone doing their job. And the person that we have to look at is there's an agency responsible for town planning and the control of unregulated buildings. So now we have to deal with the fallout. And we can't talk about what they didn't do, but for the future Bahamas, as we look at 50 years moving forward, we cannot repeat the same thing. But 50 years into the future, our grandchildren shouldn't have this problem. So my only comment is I desire that our Ministry of Town Planning, our agencies that are put there 50 years ago to ensure that shanty towns do not become a part of the Bahamian landscape, that they do their jobs. So when we solve this problem, we don't have a recurrence of this. Thank you for my contribution.
Thank you very much, caller. I have a text here. It's a question. What does a Bahamian do when they get a job on a family island? Usually, when since businesses have to find housing, how many Bahamians are out of a job? Where do Haitians learn their building skills? What college do they go to? I'm not sure I understand that question, but because I know if you get a job for Ministry of Education, they found housing. And I know if you get a hotel job and then they import you as a expat, they find housing.
So what you're saying is that the state, the state who, you know, when you go to the court, and you're the defendant, and they say it's you versus the Crown, but you have a lawyer, you have the right to a defense, because it's you one versus the resources of the whole Commonwealth of the Bahamas. Well, could you imagine that it appears as if the state and its agencies and its agenda are hogging up any and all available housing on the family islands without regard for private sector commerce and trade? Surely the state can devise a solution to its housing needs beyond first come, first serve, grab up as much rental inventory as possible. Mm-hmm. The state can afford, initiate, cause, even do on their own, create housing for people coming to the island to do state business.
I have a question for you, Erin.
Who
is building the hotels? And when I may say who, I'm not saying the builders. I'm talking about the owners.
Right.
Who are building the hotels?
Typically foreign direct investors.
And they have labor. I mean, because the labor is behemoth, yeah. Right? Who is building the apartments and houses in Abaco for the labor at this present time?
Right. So you're saying if there's a massive construction initiative and Bahamians come to the island, mm-hmm. and have to find housing, mm-hmm. and say the employer says, okay, well, I will build housing for my workers. Mm-hmm. Who is going to be building the housing for the workers while the workers are building the hotel?
Yes. Who's doing that now?
I would call Mr. John Pinder and find out if he left a list anywhere before he started campaigning for the FNM while he was still the director of labor. That's what I would do. That would be the fastest way to get that information, right?
Mm.
Who is doing that? How is the government addressing those dynamics, right? Case of development and commerce and construction. How are they detaining Haitian migrants to determine their status?
Mm-hmm.
If they don't have their documents on them to immediately show to the immigration officers, that means work has to stop until they can prove that they have status. What if the immigration officers come on the job site and they say, we don't care about what your papers say right here.
Mm-hmm.
Get in the bus and we're going to check your papers when we get to our station.
Mm.
The disruption in commerce, did it have to take place? What are the mechanisms to prevent or minimize these disruptions?
I have another question for you. On a recent live by some political people, it was alleged that there are migrants who are renting government land or for the use to build houses or to just rent it in general.
Right.
Right? Surely the government has some type of policy on that. If you're renting land that is ready being instituted, say this farmland, but right. You're living on it. Do they have a policy on it?
Okay, they do, right? So with the leasing of crown land, you're not supposed to put a residential structure on it if you're getting it for farming purposes. You're not supposed to have living quarters on it.
But all farmland have living quarters.
Listen.
All look at Michael Road.
No. Pause. All farmland in sensible jurisdictions have living quarters on it.
Mm-hmm.
In the Bahamas, we restrict that. We also have another massive problem, which is called predial larceny. Do you know what that is?
No, that's a big word.
That's a very big word. You know what that is? That's called agricultural theft. That's called thieving from farm. First of all, I don't know why I know why they use predial larceny, because they know nobody would know what it is and they'd never be assessed about it. Mm-hmm. We got a problem that drives that problem.
Mm-hmm.
We got a massive, significantly problematic issue with agricultural theft.
Mm-hmm.
It's a joke at this point. You think turning right on red is a joke?
Mm-hmm.
Agricultural theft and the lack of response from the state is a joke. So what investors do is they say, listen, I don't care what the government says. I'm not investing hundreds of thousands of dollars into this property without putting someone on the property to protect my investment.
Mm-hmm.
The government refuses. I would say this clearly. They refuse to respond to the issue. In fact, when we had the initial lockdowns, they didn't even realize that plants grow every day and animals need to be watered and fed and cleaned every day.
Mm.
They wouldn't let the farmers out their house to go to the farm.
They weren't essential.
And they didn't have living quarters on the farm. Then nobody is thinking about it. So this problem can be solved, right?
The policy, you can't live there, though. This
is how, and what I'm trying to show you is, this is how it started.
Mm-hmm.
This is how it started with farmers building small quarters for people to live on the land, despite it being against the law, to protect their investments.
Hmm. We have another caller here. Producer Patrick called through so we can engage them. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me?
Yeah, good morning, Mr. Nui. Good morning, Ms. Green.
Morning.
You know, I enjoy listening to you too, Ms. Green.
Yes, sir.
I give you a PhD in analytics. I like to hear you analyzing. You said something. You said something that triggered me, but something you said that triggered me also, and I remember it better. And it was very important, and most people, I don't know how much they read, but when you said the data on unskilled labor, right?
Mm-hmm.
that is the crux of the problem, you know, because most of these migrants are being brought in for one particular job identity and then using it for another.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is a way to curtail some of this problem. Mm-hmm. And then also I'm vexed that we're not thinking about bringing people in from other places just to mitigate the amount. I have a lot of Asian friends. I mean, we need to just look for other places for labor, too.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's becoming ridiculous. Because what happens is they're emboldening them. They're becoming emboldened, and they're bringing friends, and every, you know, I mean, this is just becoming too prevalent. You see what I'm saying? For the bohemian good. But then, Mr. Nuri,
I
got one sugar banana tree. I was thinking of giving it to you, and one avocado tree, because I hear you say you need another one. One is still in the pot. It's about 3 feet tall, but... first of all, I reluctant to give it to you because I was trying to find out if you really that naive to believe the data about all the people in the Shandy towns are behemoths. That's BS. Let me tell you something. Once I don't see that in paper,
mm-hmm.
and I do my own analytics, if the Shandy town is illegal and they don't know what's going on, how they can know who all there and the people them can get worthy, the people come in to raid y'all and or come in to do this and that, and then they doing the census and they're not asking you. For your background or who you are. They just count the people that live in the houses.
Mm.
See what I'm saying? So it's no way we could know. All right. The pandemic has taught me not to put trust in data from the status quo then. That's what it has taught me. All right? And I just can't accept that they saying that because to me that is ridiculous. And I know it cannot be true. It can never be true considering Article 7 and considering the fact that Mr. Bell brought light to the fact that fraudulent documents, they have been covered being used to obtain legitimate documents. So if you're not going to do this retroactively, let's start giving out numbers and perpetrating misinformation because there's no way that could be so. There's no way. In the final analysis, they're responsible for anyhow, and they sit down and listen to you and Ms. Green. Have a good day, man.
I appreciate it. Producer, let's go to the next caller. So let's pass him through. Go ahead, caller. Caller, can you hear me? Caller, can you hear me?
Hello?
Yes, I can hear you. Go ahead.
Just wanted to make a short contribution to the show. I know it's a busy day. Going back to, first of all, let me say good afternoon to you and Aaron.
Good day.
Going back to a comment that Aaron was making, speaking about finding out the information on the field in terms of unskilled laborers that are available in the country, as well as when you go through the site doing your immigration checks, making sure that the persons that you encounter, that these persons are documented or may have some processing in the works. My thing is, why are we so afraid to use technology that is readily available? We can have mobile devices in each vehicle that immigration deploys into the field where persons can make quick checks similar to the laptop systems that are used in most United States, something like that. You can just put the person's name in and immediately get some information, some feedback. I think the issue is dependence, where we have, and I mean this in the most respectful way possible, where we have persons who are not able to adequately enter the information, so data entry, but I don't see that as being a major barrier to why we can't employ a system like that. And that can go for any number of agencies of the government to have information readily available. So these delays in the administration of business, it would be a thing of the past. Just my short contribution.
I appreciate that. But Aaron, I want to move on to this, right?
Mm-hmm.
They say you can have more immigration officers. I thought we lowered the budget.
When I listened to the Prime Minister, right?
Go ahead.
At the national address, I thought, okay, this is a lot of fluff. And then almost immediately, someone, a member of the PLP party, not the normal sharers of information, you know, shared this document, the National Policy Framework, right? And so as soon as I looked at the document, I breathed a sigh of relief. I breathed a sigh of relief because I thought, okay, the Prime Minister wasn't just fluffing.
Mm-hmm.
What he was saying is actually sort of rooted in policy. So when he said, oh, we're going to hire more Immigration and Defense Force officers, I was like, oh okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then I see in the document they're going to hire more officers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I see in the newspaper a couple of days later, wages and salaries allocation decreased by something like $19 million.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I am wondering what is happening. Are you going to transfer people in the civil service to the Defense Force and Immigration, which garners a lower wage, and thus you reduce wages but still maintain the same number of employees? How are you going to deliver on this promise of putting a base in Inagua? How are you going to process migrants in Inagua before the courts? More staff to your regiment of officers.
I think this flew over most people's head. In terms of the numbers, the budgeting of the numbers. But they said they're going to hire more Defense Force officers, more police officers, more immigration officers, but be going down 19%.
That's what I'm saying. You've already hired all of the journalists, right? And so what's left in the budget for that? But, I mean, and let's talk about it, the jobs that are necessary, right? As soon as you begin, that's a horrible word, as soon as you begin resettling, right, or displacing people in the shanty towns, you can't get them all out at the same time. No. So it has to be staggered, right? So it means that you're going to have a patrol of officers that are almost encamped in the shanty town to ensure that buildings that have been emptied, that people have been removed from, are not reoccupied.
That's what we thought it was going to do the last time in Abaco. That didn't happen. Right. But you were saying that it's going to be you're thinking that we should have a permanent base in the shanty town manned by police officers or defense officers?
You're going to have to. Because here's why. I don't believe in destroying the structures to keep people out of them. I think you need to deconstruct and save as much material as possible. First off, deconstruct and save as much material as possible. In fact, I would love for someone from the Bar Association to give us a sort of policy suggestion on what do you do with the belongings of migrants who are documented to be in the Bahamas.
Okay.
And are living in a shanty town.
Illegal shanty town.
No, not an unregulated shanty town.
Okay.
So they haven't trespassed.
They haven't trespassed.
They're paying rent, so they have permission to be there. The house is maybe even up to code, permitted and inspected by the government, right? So that's another thing in the difference between unregulated and unlawful.
Mm-hmm.
So the home is, you're not trespassing, it's built up to code but not permitted. What happens? Can I just break that stuff up? Or am I required to deconstruct the property and return as many pieces of construction resources to you as possible?
I'm going to go to callers now, but I think I read that the government may have to apply to the magistrate or judge, justice, if the houses are built to code, even though it's not lawfully built. So I'm not sure if I misread that, but my question is, if you build a house to code, can the government force you out and you can't respond to anybody, this built to code, man, you need to keep this house here?
It's not built to code, right? It's not built properly unless you follow the proper procedure. It could be
That's
built,
different issues.
It could be built to code, but if it's not permitted, if you didn't have the inspector come in, and what do they inspect at bell cost?
I can't do that afterwards.
I can't do it afterwards. I don't think so.
No, you can't do it retrospectively.
I don't think so. No, you shouldn't be able to do it retrospectively, because that will only encourage those who can afford to do it, and those who can't to live in on the side. Anyway, with pot cake. And pot cakes are so nice, I didn't want to cast an aspersion.
Okay, let's go to the next caller. Producer Patrick, caller through. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me? Caller, can you hear me? Green ones. Caller, can you hear me? Or they hang up? But yeah, and so we are planning to build something in Inagua. That means that's a permanent base. I assume there's a permanent base where there will be migrants.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be visitors of the migrants. There'll be Defense Force officers living there. It's going to be creation of an addition to a new town, right?
Right.
And I want to know how that's impact Inagua.
Yeah.
Did the residents have the government say you have to do it, you have to do it. But do they have a say in it?
No, pause. Wait, say what?
The government say you have a new town and this is going to be resident.
I don't think it quite works like that. Look here. Sorry.
Wait, did it not?
I misheard you. No, it was my bad. I misheard you. I realize what you were saying is that we need an immediate discussion on local government. That's all.
They have local government in Inagua? I don't know.
Do they have local government on all the family islands?
All the family islands. But they build in the Defense Force base, but I hear local government mentioning.
More importantly, I haven't heard anything from the residents of Inagua that would suggest that they have been engaged in any type of consultation. But here's the next thing. Just because I don't live in Inagua don't mean this ain't my business. This is my business as a Nasuvian, as a, what they call them, Abaconian. They have a nice word. I just learned it for Abaconian people. But right, for these islanders, for Lutherans, all have a say in this discussion. Don't
But it's a done deal, though. This isn't a done deal. Because she look at me. Let's go to the caller. Caller, Pastor Caller.
When the words escape you.
Hey, good day.
Good day. Go ahead.
Hey, good day. Aaron, and I know y'all got y'all thing, but please, man, don't let us wait too long. Listen, y'all are just putting forth stuff. So y'all aren't telling us exactly what's going on, right?
It's the policy. We analyzing it.
We reading directly from the policy.
Yeah, but then y'all are asking a bunch of questions related to that. So there's still this level of uncertainty.
Yes, sir,
what
absolutely.
What I would say is, these are straightforward things. The law is the law. And I don't trust the government to do anything. You could give me one thing that the government has been successful at when it said it's going to do it, and it brought it to this. They took a while. Lincoln Bain and his group were the ones who brought this to the forefront, I mean, now. And the government then decided to start to react. They were not intending, they don't intend, and I think this is a kicking in the can, or this is a diversion to really get our mind off. You know, I think there's a saying that in Rome that when the emperor was not doing, they'll just have you go to games and events. So they'll have a bunch of things, like we having the 58 and all kind of things and celebration. They just want us to get our minds off what's going on. It's an issue with undocumented migrants. Now you have a commissioner of police or assistant commissioner who will come on the property and just tell people you can't clear that. And I heard CA 2 days ago, I think it was, you know, he was defending like these things. I find this and criticizing Lincoln Bain for this lady who was property. I would ask both of y'all, if I came on your property and one night overnight, and while y'all rode, or even in the day, and I come and I build something, y'all would have a serious problem with that. Y'all ain't got any money to try to correct that problem.
I agree with you. No problem.
All right.
We got
so,
it. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I mean,
I'm saying to y'all can't, and see, that's the strongest I ever heard you take a stand, you know, and it was against the Coalition of Independence and Lincoln Bain. And I don't like, I thought you were neutral, but I found that very, like, you know, come on, man. And that was the strongest position you ever had. But, and to me, it was unfair. One, as an independent, I'm not PLP or FLM. I'm not coalition. I'm independent, but I feel that if these guys, what they're doing, they may make some missteps along that way. But we have an issue that is now has long-term effect. You know, you have these kids who are growing up here in the Bahamas because the government failed to do whatever. And these kids who are now facing the challenges of not being able to go to university or properly, I mean, I know the government has instituted the same thing, or the challenge or health care or whatever, and they become a burden. And then, you know, the parents who, you can't just bring a large population into yours and then expect, is it any wonder why we have this massive debt that rose from like $4 billion to $10 billion now?
I can tell you what it is.
We have to really take a hold of it, and we expect the government to do it. But the government is refusing, and so now people are taking it into their hand, and the government is not, I don't trust the government, I don't trust what they're saying, and I'm cynical. So thanks so much. Appreciate
Thank you very much.
That.
Aaron, the gentleman is cynical. He don't believe this government is going to do it. And I say, once my prime minister say he can do it, he can do it. He doesn't have different intonations. He does not have different intonations,
like I tell you,
and say one thing for one set of people and the next thing for the next set of people.
On the plantation, compassion and no tolerance sound like the very same drug. I personally could feel what the gentleman is feeling, right?
Mm-hmm.
I feel what he's feeling. I was being stalked, sir, for a number of years. Mind you, it was by telephone, but I was being stalked for a number of years, and I submitted a number of... because I wanted to do it the right way. I didn't want to use connections and family, friends. I wanted to do it the right way. And after 3+ years of files going missing and nobody knowing what I was talking about when I called the station to follow up, I finally got to a prime minister and to a commissioner of police, and eventually two police officers came to my house and told me, Patelco doesn't think the threat is sufficient to warrant further investigation. So, dear caller, I want you to know that I feel you. Right?
Yes.
I feel you. We cannot rest there, though. We are in charge of our own country. We don't look for hookups in our country when we have the power to solve the problem we're trying to avoid. So we take it head on. We use the legal mechanisms available to us to take back control of governance. But here's the next thing, just very quickly before we go to the next caller. I'm not standing with anybody who puts X's on people's on homes that are occupied by
like
people
that?
And children. That seems biblical to me, except I don't know if they realize they may be on the wrong side of biblical history.
It's like a red mark. Anyway, why aren't the shanty towns being demolished now, tomorrow, next week?
Because we don't have a housing inventory to be able to put these people in.
So that's what this reason
is? It has to be the delay. It's always been the delay. You see, the government doesn't like to talk about its obligations, the same way like parents don't like to talk about the money they owe their children. To put that aside, the government has a degree of assurance that people in the country are living in a safe and approved environment. We don't have the housing inventory to put the people. That's why they're in shanty towns.
Mm-hmm.
They're not in shanty towns because they love living in squalor.
No.
They're in shanty towns because affordable housing is not available. We don't have a land inventory. We don't have any real land laws, landlord-tenant regulations. We don't have things to protect the landlord. We don't have things to protect the tenant from unscrupulous actors. We won't force landlords to secure property. We won't force landlords to ensure that they have the basic amenities for families. There are just so many things.
Let's quickly go to the caller. Caller, you have 30 seconds. Patrick, caller through. 30 seconds, caller. Can you hear me? Caller, going once. Caller, going twice. Move on. Let's go to the next caller. Ah, we're out of time. I was hoping that I can get that 30 seconds in, caller. Forgive me. We look like we have to come back and analyze this because
yes,
it has some more points.
Let people know this is the National Policy Framework on Immigration, February 2023. Search it and read it.
This is the policy, and we are analyzing the policy. Anyway, we got to go. This has been Guardian Radio AM and On the Clock with Aaron Green, and it's a mashup Wednesday. Have a wonderful day.
96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.